And it is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Elmer and Peg Webb. It is Your Money. This week, managing cash flow is like planning a summer vacation. Please welcome to the program the founder of Wealth Enhancement, Bruce Elmer, and Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor, Peg Webb. Hello to both of you. Happy to have you back this week.
Yeah, good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hi, Peg. Hello, Susie Jones. And Peg, it's good to have you back. Susie, thanks. That's a nice lead in. Peg, maybe we're a little late with this show. I already feel like we're in the home stretch of summer. Minnesota State Fair starting soon. Kids are going back to school. But I think this is still relevant. Managing cash flow is like planning your summer vacation, whether you're still going to get a trip in yet this year and go up to the lakes in northern Minnesota or northern Wisconsin, or just planning anything yet this summer. You're not going to get very far, number one, without fuel or gas in your car. But number two, you probably plan it out, right? You just don't go take off without a destination in mind and without reservations where you're going. You plan your route. You have a plan. You have gas in the car. And managing your financial world, metaphorically speaking, is very, very similar. Peg?
Yeah, I think this is definitely a late summer thing that we're going to be talking about. But yet, I think if we just put it in perspective, everything we're going to be talking about today is going to be important no matter whether it's summer, fall, winter, or spring. So stay tuned. But today, I actually really like the outline, and I like the fact that our marketing team has put this together in this fashion, because what they did is they created five financial navigation tools, but they're kind of like cash flow planning essentials. So I love that they're pairing it with, you know, going on this great summer trip, but there's things that you need to know. Now, you mentioned very quickly, Bruce, but setting your destination, that to me is your goals. Packing an emergency kit, that's your emergency fund. You see the correlation here? You're in the car, but yet, you know, you have goals and you're in the car with your emergency kit. And three, you're knowing your dashboard, because when you drive, are you going too fast? Are you going too slow? Is the engine light on? Well, that's your personal financial statements. Tracking your route, same thing as kind of recording your expenses, whether it's on your computer or it's in person, you know, writing it down. And then traveling in sync, communicating with your fellow travelers, your loved ones as you go. I think it would be a great idea, Bruce, just to take each one of these five and dive a little bit deeper into how we correlate these with financial planning.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's a great idea. And the one thing I want to mention, though, before we dive into that is, I think, Peg, I don't remember the exact statistics, but I'm sure, reasonably sure, that the statement I'm about to make is correct. So when we do this metaphorical comparison of planning a vacation versus planning for our financial future, planning for retirement, our financial planning, most people spend way more time and put way more effort into planning vacations than they do their own retirement or personal finance. And I'm not saying these vacations and these family trips aren't important. They're very important. And a nice memory with your family is priceless, and you should put some time and effort into it. But most people don't put the same kind of effort into planning for their own financial success, which is just jaw-dropping to me. But I know that's factually accurate. I don't have the exact statistics, but I know that the basic statement I just made is accurate. So let's dive into these five things of planning for your trip, or planning your cash flow, or planning for your financial success. Peg?
Yes, I love that. So number one is a big deal for Peg Webb. I've always been a goal setter. So when we talk about setting your destination, what are you planning for? In my mind, how could you possibly leave the house without knowing exactly where you're going to be, where you're going to stop? Because if you are not a goal person, yeah, I mean, maybe it would be fun just to jump in the car and wing it. but you probably will have some problems along the way. So when I think about goals, they have to be very clear to me to be motivated to write down my goals for the year. Now, I'm well beyond halfway of the year, and I'm glad to report. I'm on track. I'm excited. I don't look at it often. You know, quarterly, I'll look at it and say, am I on track? But there's this thing that that I always talk about with goals, and they're called SMART goals, because you can't just willy-nilly say, nah, here's a goal for 2025. Let's see if I make it. You know, it's much more serious than that. When you think about setting a goal, you actually have to be very specific, meaning you just need some kind of target dates or some real details to, you know, maybe why your motivation is to have the specific goal. And then once you're excited about that you have this goal, then you want to track it and see if it, you have to measure it along the way, because believe it or not, I get sidetracked as well, because I'm like, oh, that shiny thing looks better than the goal that I've had, you know, for 3 months. So stay on track. Or, you know, just like we're driving in the car, you know, I'm kind of like driving in circles sometimes, because I'm like, oh, that looks good, instead of the goal I have. And then they have to be realistic and attainable. I tend to be somebody that really reaches for a fabulous goal. And I kind of know that it isn't as doable as maybe I think it should be. And so you have to stay kind of realistic. Otherwise, you're going to crash, right? If you're not doing well, and then you might just throw it aside because you were just too unrealistic about what your goals are. And then they have to have a really high purpose for yourself to feel like, I'm going to research this, I'm going to put these down, I'm going to measure them, I'm going to make this kind of part of my, you know, monthly or quarterly thing that you're going to report to yourself. And then there has to be absolute deadlines, because I'm no different than anyone else. If I have 365 days to get something done, and really it's not something that motivates me at all, I will be on the 364th day sitting up probably all night trying to get it done. But I'm also a person, and sorry, I'm going so long, but I'm also a person that walks around thinking about things like this. And I may not sit at a chair and have a piece of paper, but I've been walking around thinking about it. And so even if I sat down on the 364th day, I think I'd be okay, because it's like all in my head and not just written on paper. Bruce?
And in college, you wrote your term paper the night before it was due. You were that person?
I was absolutely, and I had some, and I usually called for help at that point, like some super smart people, and said, hey, you know, give me a few tidbits of what I need to get in this paper.
Well, I love what you did there about, you know, so we're setting a destination. So in the old days, and I'm old enough to remember maps, you know, if we're going out to the Black Hills, or we're going to South Dakota to see the Mount Rushmore, we'd look at a map. Today you'd look at a phone. But, I mean, you set a course, you set a direction. If we're going out there, where are we going to stay? Are we going to stay in Custer? Are we going to stay in Rapid City? Where are we going to stay? We have a plan. We're not going to drive north. We're not going to drive east. We have to go west and a little bit south. And I like what you did and compared that to setting a destination in our financial life by setting goals. How do we know if we're on the right trail if we don't know where we're going? We have to know where we're going. And the only thing I would add to the wonderful job you did, Peg, on number one, setting your destination, what are you planning for, is that those goals are based on core values. What's important to you? When do you want to retire? What does your life look like at retirement? Do you buy a second home? Do you snowbird? Do you help your kids? Do you help your grandkids with college? These are all things that you have to talk about and you have to fit into your planning. And again, there's no right or wrong answers here, but your goals are going to be driven by your core values or what's important to you. And we've talked about this a lot. Sometimes when I have this discussion with a new client, they know exactly where they want to go. They've thought about it. Other times you get the deer in the headlights look, and we have to actually help them set their goals based on what's important to them because they've never thought about it before. But I love the way you did that, Peg. What's the second one?
The second one is packing an emergency kit, why you need a financial spare tire. I like that, too. You know, every traveler, I don't know if it's so much today because I feel like cars are pretty reliable. But in the past, for sure, we always had that spare tire to the point where I actually learned how to put on a tire when I was 16, when I first got my driver's license, because it was off. It was like more frequent that that happened. And so with your finances, having an emergency fund, just some cash on the side, we normally say 6 months of living expenses. Sometimes we can go down to three because you have some other resources that maybe you could liquidate, you know, quicker. But when it comes to real emergencies, they happen. You know, life is what happens when you're making other plans. I mean, they just happen. Something medical might happen. You know, I had a client that they broke their ankle, you know, a week before they were going on the trip. And sometimes you get kind of wound up if you're not a great known traveler, that you get a little bit anxiety and, fell down the stairs and broke the ankle. So you need to have an emergency, you know, idea of if that happens when you're traveling. But you really and truly, when it comes to your finances, you need to have some liquid money that you can access easily. Bruce?
Yes, and this liquid money, or sometimes, you know, emergency fund, rainy day account. Well, I just want to be clear, this is money that is not exposed to stocks. Peg and I always talk about long-term, short-term, mid-term. This is short-term money, safe money. Not all of your money needs to be in growth. We want some of your money where the priority is liquidity and safety, availability. And yeah, you want to get the highest interest rate you can, but we're not so concerned there about return on investment. And Peg said 6 months worth of living expenses, that's the key, not 6 months worth of income, but your living expenses. And then Peg, I would even add, as we get closer to retirement or as we get into retirement, we probably want that number to be higher. We probably want more than 6 months. We probably want a couple of years because we want enough money in that safe emergency rainy day account that if the stock market took a hit, went into a retraction, we want to have enough money that we can use for income, for lifestyle, so that we never have to sell stocks when the market's down or at an inopportune time. So for a lot of people listening right now, 6 months living expenses is a good benchmark. But as we get older, I think that should even be a little bit higher. Peg?
Yeah, third one is checking your dashboard. What's kind of interesting, I was smiling here as I was looking at that, because the dashboards of today are nothing like the dashboards of yesteryear. Because I feel like today in my car, the screen is probably big. It's probably twice the size of my laptop. So I've got all sorts of things going on, telling me what's going on in the car. You know, if I want to change the music, and now I can even talk to the car and say, find me this. So when it comes to checking your dashboard, though, we relate that to personal financial statements, something where you're trying to keep track of if you're on target. And so that has a lot to do with your personal cash flow statement. All of us should know somehow, and I hope you have it written down, that shows your income versus your spending. I don't know how you could possibly not know that, because you could very well go into a deficit and not even know about it if you're not checking and not double checking and triple checking. But cash flows are your, you know, salary, your dividends, your interest. Maybe you have some side jobs. I wouldn't so much think about dividends and interest with cash flow, because I like to have my clients reinvest that money. Outflows is you might still have some debt like mortgages, and you have utilities. And I mean, those, they're kind of a long list if you actually watch your budget and all the line items, and then how your income versus spending is correlating, or if it's, you know, running on empty, like we're on our car, then, you know, you better make some adjustments. So that this isn't something, Bruce, that you would just look at the end of the year. I think this has to be kind of a monthly check to keep it straight, Bruce.
Yeah, if you look at your dash and your needle is getting close to the E, you stop and get gas. If your 6 months worth of emergency funds or rainy day money is down to 3 months, you need to replenish that. You need to fill up with gas. And Peg, I think the key to this is what you said at the end. You need to check it periodically. And it's ironic, and this is just coincidence. I did not plan this just because of the topic. I'm actually doing that this morning. I'm kind of looking at, we call it personal financial statement at Wealth Enhancement. We prepare for our clients something called a current financial inventory. It's kind of the same thing. I like our format better than most people, how they keep their personal financial statement. But I'm updating my financial inventory. I'm pulling all my statements because these numbers don't stay static, right? They're changing. You're applying earnings. You're spending money. There's money coming in, money going out. So I'm just looking at it literally this morning to see kind of where I'm at. And I don't do it maybe every month, but I do it, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a year just to check in where I'm at. Pick.
The other thing I would just suggest, and you're probably doing it, Bruce, is one person in the household usually takes on that task, right? It's, you don't necessarily share that task. Hey, you do it this month, you do it next month. I would just encourage everybody that if you are the person who does all that and tracks all that, then you share that information with your significant other, because life is what happens when you're making other plans. If something were to happen, just make sure you're aware of, you know, all your assets, you know, how many liabilities you have out there, what's your net worth, where's the wills, just all of those kinds of things, because we have learned the hard way, right? Just watching other families go through, you know, something that negatively happened to them. Bruce?
Yeah, it's a great point. And I'm a great example. I'm married to someone that's artistic, and financial things really don't interest her, but I do, you know, clue her in on where we're at on things. And she, you know, when we have that conversation, it's a good conversation, and she appreciates knowing. But if I didn't check in and report back to her, she wouldn't know. So, and I think it's important that she does. Peg?
Yeah. The next one, tracking your route. Where's the money really going? Well, we just kind of talked about making sure that you have it all, you know, calculated and written down. But I love this. Have you ever missed a turn because you weren't paying attention? Always with me. Now, I've got the, you know, the thing in the car that kind of tells me. And if I miss a turn because I'm talking to somebody or I'm listening to music, or it reroutes it. So now we're in a better place than we've ever been. I have no idea how we could have drove and had these paper maps. I mean, now that I go back, how did we not run off the road? So tracking your spending, you know, is a great detail. The other thing we didn't mention, and I think it's appropriate here, is that there's so many tools out there now that you can use, like Mint, Monarch. My husband is really techy, so, you know, we've got fine detail on everything because he knows the software to use. He's always updating it, and so we're a good team that way too. But a lot of times people are just you know, spending way too much on things that don't matter. And I would say one of my arguments today are, if I want to watch some movie, I have to belong to that particular channel, you know, and then it's another $10 a month. Or, I mean, it's hard to keep track of now. You can get up to 10, 15 of these and not even knowing, because all of these payments come out of our checking account. Well, you know, my husband says, are all these necessary? And so I said, well, I really don't know, but I, you know, checked the box that day, and I don't know that I've ever gone back to that same channel. So just a good idea to record your expenses, and maybe you have some money there that you could give back to yourself, because you need to become aware of what's coming out of your checking.
Peg, that's a great point. And again, you alluded to it a little bit earlier, that even you get distracted and you see this shiny thing or whatever. But I think it's easier to stay on task if you remind yourself of your goals and objectives. And that doesn't mean you can't have fun along the way. You know, we believe that you can enjoy life, live life, and still save and invest for your future. It's not an either or, but oftentimes when I look into a client's situation, I can find inefficiencies where I can recapture money and give that back to them, which they now have available for savings and investments. And it might be your example. Maybe they're paying for TV channels they don't use. Maybe they're paying for a health club membership they don't use. Maybe they're paying more in taxes than they have to, or more for insurance than they have to, and we can help them figure out how to lower those costs. Susie, I am keeping an eye on the clock. I think what we need to do, we're almost due for a break. When we come back, we'll finish with our fifth item on our list. We'll kind of summarize everything, and then we'll get listeners involved and let them drive most of the second half of the show.
That sounds great. And if you are listening right now, we invite you to join us on the show. Maybe you have a question for Bruce or for Peg. The number is 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. You can either call or text. We'll get the questions to them after this quick break. And welcome back to the second half of Your Money. It is 8:34. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb, talking about managing cash flow, kind of like planning a summer vacation. Welcome back to you, Peg and Bruce. We have a couple questions coming in. Maybe you want to wrap up and recap, and we'll talk about what folks want to hear about as well.
Susie Jones, absolutely. We'll get listeners involved here shortly. Listeners, thank you. Thank you for hanging in there. If you joined us late, as Susie mentioned, Peg and I have been talking about managing cash flow, financial planning, and how it's like similar to planning a summer vacation or a trip. And we had a list of five things. We got through four of them. Number one was set your destination. What are you planning for? And we equated that to setting goals or having a financial plan. Where do you want to get to in life? What are your goals based on your core values? Number two, planning or packing an emergency kit. You need a financial spare tire, an emergency kit, just like you do for travel. You need a rainy day fund. You need emergency money, safe money that's available when you need it. Number three, check your dashboard. And we equated this to your personal financial statements. Know where you're at. Know what your outflow is, what your inflow is, what you have in your accounts, and check it periodically because it's going to change. It's not going to stay stagnant. And then number four, we had track your route. Where's your money going? And Peg, I don't know if we said everything we wanted to on number four, but then we had one more as well. Peg?
Yeah, we can jump into number five. This is my favorite one, Bruce. It is travel in sync. Communicate with your financial co-pilot. If you're traveling with your spouse or maybe your partner, you know, have good communication is key because I get in this circumstance often where, you know, we're in sync and then all of a sudden I can have an idea and I just kind of torpedo the whole thing and go right versus going left. And so when it comes to your money, you really have to communicate with your money more, I would say even more than maybe a trip or being on the road. Because if one is a true saver, this is what I've realized in the decades I've been doing this, one is a real saver and one is a real spender. And actually, quite frankly, a lot of those partnerships are that much of an opposite. So picture us as a financial advisor coaching these people. And, you know, they both have great ideas. They both have aspirations of what they want to do with the money and they co-mingle everything. And so that's where I feel like financial planning is such a great idea. If you do it yourself or you get some help, and I actually think it's very helpful to get help because it's hard for people to communicate to that detail, especially with money. Money is such a sensitive subject, no matter what. So, Bruce, I would just say traveling in sync, communicating with your financial co-pilot just means you better have some open discussion. Hopefully you have wishes and wants, and they can be different, but you also need to then work together on that journey so you can track those things that you want versus the other person. And by the way, it does actually work. And so that's the fun part of us as advisors, is it being able to help people like that.
Yeah, and you know what? And communication is the key here. And we said it in the first half of the show also, we are not the kind of advisors that believe that every spare penny that you have should go into some sort of savings and investment. You can have fun along the way. You can take family vacations. You can go out and have a nice night out and go to a sporting event or go to a concert or the theater or a nice dining, you know, experience. It's okay to do those things as long as you are still committed to your financial plan. And I mentioned also in the first half of the show that if you remind yourself of your core values, what's truly important to you, it's easier to stay on track and not overspend on that other stuff. But Peg, to your point, and I'm not knocking her or being critical, and she knows this, she would admit to it, and my wife is the spender, I'm the saver, and again, we can do both, we just have to communicate. But you know, to your point, if we had a sum of money and I said, hey, we should put that into this investment, I think we can get a return of X, or we could use it and you can go buy a closet full of clothes. My wife's a performer. She's a singer-songwriter. She would rather get a closet full of clothes, and I'd rather put it in an investment. Well, you know what? Maybe we split that money and we do a little bit of both. We just have to communicate, compromise, understand that we're both wired differently, and that's okay. And again, you don't have to make sacrifices. You don't have to put yourself on restrictions. It's about freedom. It's about enjoying life along the way. You don't have to have restrictions, but you do have to commit to your long-term savings and investment plan so you get where you ultimately want to go, and that's what the entire show has been about. Peg, any other final thoughts, any key messages you want to convey to listeners before we get them involved?
No, I think we get listeners involved.
All right, that's my cue, 651-461-9226. A texter just writes a short time ago, I am focusing on paying off debt. After I get that paid off, I am planning to fund my emergency fund. Should I be doing that at the same time, not waiting for one and then the other, but trying to do it a little of both?
Susie, that is such a good question. So, Peg, we talk on the show a lot about both of these things, about eliminating debt and about establishing a rainy day fund or an emergency fund as you prioritize. And one of the things that we have to be sensitive to, and I think sometimes I'm not, we can talk about all these great ideas in the financial planning world that you should do this, you should max out your company retirement plan, you should open up a Roth, you can do all these things, but most people don't have an infinite amount of money. They can't do every good idea that we might have. So how do you prioritize, and what would you do in terms of establish an emergency fund versus paying off debt? Would you prioritize one over the other, or would you try to do both simultaneously? How would you respond to that texter's great question, Peg?
Well, if this person is a long-term listener to our show, they probably know that I'm actually all about paying debt and being debt-free. Why would I say that? I would say that because, do you remember, I actually got to experience and coach people for decades of time. So I've seen everything. I've seen every case. I've seen, you know, this couple, this individual, this person. And I have to say, my most, the clients that have done the best are the ones that are debt-free. So in this case, I love the fact that you are going to pay off that debt. There are other ways to just have maybe a backup financial emergency fund instead of actually funding one. I mean, maybe you have a credit card, and I know that would be terrible, right, if you had to go to it, but it still could be a safety debt that you have that you, if something happened, you could pull on that money. Now, I feel like the banks are still paying a good rate of return. So, you know, maybe having some kind of a line of credit or something with a bank, that kind of thing. Bruce?
Hey, I totally agree with you. I would just add this caveat. I think it depends upon what the debt is. So if it was, like you said, if it was a balance on a credit card with a high interest rate, double-digit interest rate, I would say pay down the debt. But if you're paying down, say, a mortgage and you're financed at less than 3%, I'd probably say build your emergency fund first. So I think it depends upon the situation and the cost of the debt service. Susie, do we still have a caller?
We do, 651-461-9226. Jack is calling in this morning from Hugo. Thanks for calling in, Jack. Appreciate your time. And what is your question for Bruce and Peg?
Yeah, I have a question. I've hesitated on Roth IRA conversions. I'm 65. My wife's 62. And one of the hesitations is you pay the tax and then you think about, okay, how long till I, you know, get that money, you know, at least back to even and then growing. It seems to me that with this new SALT increase, state and local tax from 10 to 40,000, that might, accounting-wise, make it an even better idea to, you know, pull the trigger on doing a Roth conversion. Any thoughts on that?
So, Jack, thanks for listening. That's a great question. This is so coincidental. I just last week met somebody from Hugo, a really nice person, and they had to kind of tell me where it was. I could see it in my mind's eye, the road sign, but I couldn't remember where it was. So, Peg, Jack asked a great question. He's talking about Roth conversion. He threw in the wrinkle of the SALT, the state, local, you know, and how that has changed as part of the new bill that the president just signed. How do we determine, you know, when is it good to do a Roth conversion? When is it not good? Talk about some of the factors that go into that analysis for us, Peg.
Well, one of the things I thought of right away is not only is the SALT coming back as a deduction, but also for people that are 65 and older will benefit from an expanded deduction of $6,000 as a deduction from your income. So I understand one of you is 65 and one is 62. So one of you will be able to use that that deduction. So I thought right away when that came out, oh, that's going to hesitate some people from wanting to do Roth conversions because they want to make sure that they are able to take that deduction. And why I say that is because if your income is higher than $150,000 on a joint return, you don't qualify for that deduction. So you're kind of trying to keep your income down, same as a single person. If you're $75,000 and single, then you would be eliminated if you went over that bogey. I am still a huge fan of Roth conversions. And 65 and 62 is so young. I mean, think about it. You have decades of time. So no matter what, I don't think that taxes are going to go lower. I'm looking farther in the future. I just see such a high amount of debt out there. And there's going to be a need for us to raise taxes at some point. This is just Peg Webb's opinion here. So I encourage people to do Roth conversions, especially when you're this young, because you will break even and you'll have this tax free for the long term. Bruce?
Yeah, I agree with Peg, Jack. The only thing I would add again, though, is to Jack's point that, you know, if you do the conversion in the short term, you're behind because you have this tax or this cost to do the conversion. And that's correct. And we can calculate how long in the tax-free account in the Roth it takes to make that tax back up. But the other thing I would remind everybody listening is there's a tax lien on that IRA money, that traditional IRA, traditional 401k, that tax-deferred retirement plan. always has a tax lien on it. It's never going to go away. You're going to pay taxes when you withdraw the money, or if you die and leave that money to someone else, they're going to pay the taxes at their tax rate. So one of the things we look at is, can we get money out of that traditional retirement plan, that tax-deferred plan, and can we soak up a low bracket? If we can take money out at, say, 12%, we might say, yeah, let's convert at least till we soak up the 12 bracket, but we'll stop before we bump up into the 22% bracket. But those taxes are always going to be there. They're never going to go away. It's just a question of at what rate can we pay them? Are we going to pay them, or is someone that inherits that money going to pay them? And we want to, and obviously, Peg, there's other variables that come into play. We always talk about ripple effects. We always talk about things like Medicare Part B premiums 2 years down the road, you know, that we have to look at. But, Jack, that's a great question, and I agree with Peg in general. You get to a point, and I definitely like the idea of doing convert Roth conversion, especially if you have very little there now. In our experience, I think Peg would agree with me, most people have the vast majority of their money in tax-deferred plans with nothing or very little in tax-advantage like Roth. So we like that idea of trying to build tax diversification if we can. Peg, anything else on that?
Well, the only thing I would add is on the financial statement that we talked about earlier in the show, it's almost as if we should put a huge IOU to the IRS if you have 100% in deferred IRAs as a liability on your statement. Because what happens is people forget that, you know, 33% of that money could very well be IRS's money, not yours. And so I try to coach clients and have for decades about trying to diversify how you're going to be taxed, not immediately, but even long term. Bruce?
Yeah, I'm sorry to drag this on, but try to give Jack all and listeners all the information we can. I've told this story, I think, at least once, maybe a couple times. Earlier this year, I encountered somebody who wanted my help. They retired from the financial services industry. They knew how to invest. They knew how to diversify their investments. They created a nice net worth, but it was all in a traditional IRA. They had over $5 million in a traditional IRA and very little other money other than a put and take like checking account. And I said, you're in the industry. You accumulated a lot of money. Why are you calling me? What can I do for you? And this person was like, well, I'm in my 70s, and my required minimum distribution is throwing me into a high tax bracket. I have so much money in IRA. Is there anything I can do about it? And I'm like, well, not now. It's probably too late. We should have tried to, you know, go for tax diversification years ago. At this point, there's probably nothing you can do. So that's why that's a good example of why Peg and I feel so strongly about Roth conversions. But Jack, you're right. It doesn't always make sense. But a lot of times it might, and if you can't do that analysis on your own, I'm not trying to do a commercial for wealth enhancement, but we could help you make that determination whether or not it makes sense for you. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A couple of questions coming in. Maybe you can get this one quickly. A listener wanted to know what SALT, we just mentioned SALT, what is that?
State, that's an acronym, state and local tax. And Peg, maybe you want to dive in a little deeper on that. But quick disprogramming note that I meant to mention. We've been saying for a while that we're going to have a show where we dig in deeper mm-hmm. to the big, beautiful bill. And we're still going to do that. And that'll obviously be one of the subcategories when we do that. But Peg, you want to elaborate at all on what Jack was talking about?
Yeah, that show is August 31st that we're going to be talking about all the details here. Yes. So many people don't itemize anymore because of the changes of the tax law. I want to say about 70% just do a standard tax return without the itemized deductions, because a lot of the itemized deductions had been taken away. Well, now here comes the SALT deduction. And it's temporary, but so you can take a deduction through 2029 and And so the reason you may want to do that is because that would be something that would help you reduce your taxes. So I think because of some of these things that are out there, Bruce, that are new and they're actually not long term, they have a deadline here of a certain year, then we have to start kind of redoing the tax returns again to see if it's favorable to itemize or just take the standard deduction. And then you throw in that $6,000 that I talked about earlier, you have to put that into play as well. Bruce?
Yeah, the state and local taxes have always been deductible on your federal return, but I think they increased the amount. I don't remember the exact number, but it's like fourfold. So people that maybe took the standard deduction last year, maybe with the increase in the salt levels and some of the other changes in the Big Beautiful Bill, might be able to itemize again. It's certainly something they're going to want to look at. But again, we will take a deeper dive on this. And Peg said the show is August 31st. Susie, can we sneak in one more?
Yeah, let's get Karen on the line. She just called in with a question. Go ahead, Karen. You're on with Bruce and Peg.
All right, great. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a very quick question on the new $6,000 deductible deduction if you're 65 and older. And I'm single, and so I'm up to the $75,000 limit for earnings. If you go just a little bit over that, do you lose the whole deduction, or does it just phase out a little bit?
Hey, Karen, thanks for listening, and thanks for a great question. Peg, so if you just go over by a dollar, does it wipe it out completely, or is it pro rata in some way?
Actually, I'm blank right now. I think it's pro rata.
It is?
Well, I'm guessing, so I don't have it on the top of my head right now.
Karen, I apologize, but hang in there. We can look it up and come back and talk about it next week. Or again, we'll definitely do a deeper dive on the 31st. I'm not sure either, Peg, but I actually thought the opposite. I thought the whole thing would be wiped out if you go over, but I'm not entirely sure. We have a difference of opinion, and neither one of us know. So let's make sure we take a peek at that, and we'll come back and talk about that next week, and then we'll definitely talk about it in even more detail on the 31st. Sorry, Karen. So, Susie, I know we're about out of time. Thanks, Karen. Thanks, listeners. Sorry we couldn't give you a better answer, Karen.
All right. Well, we are almost out of time, but anyone that did not get their question answered online or on the phone can reach out directly to Wealth Enhancement, 1-888-6-ADVICE, 1-888-6-ADVICE, or you can email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Again, that's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week.